thewellnesscouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives. Download the app today.
TheWellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives.
Welcome to 100 Not Out, featuring your hosts, Dr. Damien Kristoff and Marcus Pierce.
Hello and welcome to 100 Not Out, a weekly show dedicated to helping you master the art of aging well. Marcus Pierce here with you, and as always, I am joined by what is really circling around the world quite quickly, my B-fam, my brother from another mother, the great Dr. Damien Kristoff. How are you, B-fam?
Hello, Piercy. You know what? The other day I listened to that episode and
Did you?
I did, and I was like, "Oh, what's BFAM again?" And then I had read that it was going around the world like wildfire. It's not only clickbait, but it's like gathering momentum. It's amazing. So I thought I better get up to date with the acronyms, and so I thought, there's no better podcast to listen to regarding acronyms than, was that two episodes ago or one episode ago? I can't recall, but I'll tell you what, it was good listening. Even I had a little chuckle.
I saw Nick from Honey Australia, you know Nick and Nathan. Nick was in Byron Bay over the weekend for a bit of Blues Fest action, and his lovely wife, Michaela, who decided to bust her foot like 2 weeks before getting on a plane. So she was stuck in a moon boot. And we caught up for breakfast with another mutual friend of ours, Sean Rolls. Shout out to a few people already, 1 minute in.
Sure. Jeepers.
And Nick said to me, "G'day, B-fam, how are ya?" And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, what am I missing here? And I was like, "Oh, B-fam, brother from another mother." And he's like, "Yeah, you guys are quick on that podcast, aren't you?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, we just make it up on the spot as we go."
Yeah, flying.
I totally forgot what B-fam was until he said it. OTF.
Yeah.
On the fly. And we actually, I was like, "Yeah, no, we're a whole different entity when we're recording together." Speaking of which, because we haven't spoken to each other in a little while, because you have been spending quality time with QT. Your son, Jackson, QT. OS.
Oldie but a goodie. It's an oldie but a goodie, though.
Yeah, when I was telling my kids where acronyms came from, I said, "Go and ask ASAP and OS. You've been OS having some QT with your wonderful young son, Jackson. And first of all, how was your time with Jackson and no doubt Amber as you were sipping on cocktails, catching up with Jacko?
Yeah, we just hung out. It was unreal. Just nice time. 4 days in the sun. We had 4 days of sunshine here in Melbourne at the same time, so I felt like I'd left at the wrong time. But it was beautiful. And of course, the barley service is second to none. Like, everyone's happy to see you. They're happy to serve. You know, 20 patrons in a restaurant, 45 staff. Like, everyone's there for you. It's just unbelievable. And they're just so kind and polite and gracious, and you know, they epitomize the attitude, like at least expressing that attitude on the outside. I don't know what's going on the inside, but on the outside, they are, I think, the example of what it would be good for all of us to be as we get older and to get into our senior years. I think their style of the approach to life and to people, I think, is second to none. Like,
that's a great comment, and I think it is why we do love, as Australians, travelling to Bali. They are just a beautiful people. But we also it's a great segue that you bring that up, because I was spending quality time with my family over the weekend. We also had 4 days of sunshine, but I didn't have to travel halfway around the world to see my family or to get sunshine. If you live in Victoria, it's pretty much what you have to do. Travel up the East Coast or travel overseas, OS. But whilst I was enjoying 4 days of sunshine with my family, doing a bit of house proud home beautiful work, an email landed in my inbox, Domo, and it was perhaps the greatest piece of longevity advice that I think I've seen from a centenarian, because we often get asked about our podcast, what's their secret, you know, what do the oldies tell you is their secret to longevity? And it is a theme that you'll see in all types of clickbait articles, you know, what are the secrets? Is it chocolate? Is it olive oil? Is it wine? Is it meditation? Is it prayer? Is it family? Whatever it is. Well, the oldest woman on the planet to this day is Maria Moreira. Now, Maria, Spanish resident, confirmed recently by Guinness World Records as the world's oldest person. Moreira said that one key to longevity is to stay away from toxic people. And then that kind of led into an article talking about how research is showing that toxic relationships can impact mortality and cause health problems. And I reckon you and I have been banging on about this for God knows how long, that the quality of our relationships has a large impact on the quality of our physical health. And hallelujah, yeah. A centenarian, a super centenarian technically, super. Has come the out and one. Said, stay away from toxic people.
Yeah. And it's such a great thing. But well, I find it so fascinating that so many people get embroiled in a toxic relationship. They find themselves in it. They're difficult to leave. I don't know whether or not it's, I don't know what it is, but you know, I think I've seen it through my work life. I feel like sometimes I try to rescue those relationships. You think, oh, it can't be that bad. It started off so good. And you know, if I reflect on that, some of the toxic relationships I've had, even in the workspace, it would have been way better to have cut the cord like ages before. And maybe my life's been shortened as a result of those toxic relationships.
Well, if I don't make it to 100, you've got them out. That's the whole point.
If I don't make it to 115, it's because of them.
You're blaming me. You're blaming me. I've been a toxic influence on your life. I'm sorry, Damien.
Not you,
Pissy. Sorry, my brother.
Not you,
this relationship is causing you too much stress.
Not you, B-fam. It's other people have. But, you know, it's a funny thing because, you know, what Maria says here is that she just didn't do them. But I find it so fascinating that people find themselves stuck in them and can't get out of them. Why do people get stuck in toxic relationships, PC? Oh. You're the relationship guru. You're the mindset guy. You've got the seven stages to an exceptional life. Tell me more about it. Why do people get stuck in these relationships?
This is going to sound terribly insensitive and controversial.
Okay.
And I say this with all the compassion in the world. A lot of people will stay in a toxic relationship because they will justify or rationalize that it's not that bad and that it's not that toxic. There is a one-liner. I've attributed it many times before, but I won't now, and that is that we get what we put up with. And so in toxic relationships, the biggest question we have to ask ourselves is what we're putting up with worthy of what we want in our lives? And I think Maria Moreira has answered that emphatically, that if you want to live a great long life, you deserve to have great relationships. And to your point, Damo, toxic relationships, depending on who that person is, if it's an intimate relationship, incredibly complicated to get out. And depending on if that toxic relationship is physical and emotional abuse, that can be incredibly difficult to get out. But at the same time, I think we would also say it's incredibly necessary to get support to get out of that level of toxicity. We do it if it was with nutrition. We'd say you've got to get out of this level of toxicity. We do it if it was overspending. We've got to help you out of this toxic spending.
Would we? Like who tells a fat person you got to stop eating shit food? No one. Like who tells a skinny person you got to start eating more? Who tells someone who's spending too much money to rein it in? Like it's only going to be one person that's probably going to do that. So I don't know.
To the point, it's our loved ones. That's my whole thing.
But who does? Like until it's too late. Like if you get a fat person putting on too much weight and they get really big. Like who tells that person, listen, you've kind of got to dial it. You've got to dial it back.
Well, you know, here we go then. About, here we go. Go on.
It's not until someone has been diagnosed with an eating disorder that they get told to start eating food. It's usually not until it's too late. And then what if like someone's in a toxic relationship? Nobody really notices until the shit's hit the fan. So what, like how do we recognize it, PC? How do we know what's going on? If you're in it, you're probably hiding it from other people. And And you've probably justified how good that relationship is, even though it's a shocker. So what do people need to be doing? How do they push the alarm button? How do they signal that they need some
help? I love this question, but I've got to ask it. I've got to give my answer through asking you some questions as a health professional, because you give your services of love, and people might find that a curly word to use in relation to many health professionals. But for people like my beautiful wife Damo. Hello to my best friend Sarah and my beautiful wife Damo. To people like Sarah and Damo who give their heart and their soul. We've gone from a beef fam to a wife real quick.
Your BFS.
BFF, wifey.
BFS,
happy beef fam, happy life. So for people like Damo and Sarah that have given their heart and soul to really their practice members, their patients, their clients, whatever you want to call them, like these people wear their heart on their professional sleeve and they care deeply. And we talk about compassion and empathy and so on. And then you've got other health professionals talking about emotional detachment. You can only help people when you don't care and so on and so forth. You have had people come into your practice for years, Damo, that have had a problem, and it's been your professional obligation to call that problem out and to actually demonstrate the consequences of that behavior if it were to continue. So before I give you my view on how do we do if we don't want to talk to people about it, when people are coming to you, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're not there going, oh, let's just gloss over this and talk about the weather instead. You're actually going, well, there are consequences to this behavior. If we don't adjust your food plan, if we don't adjust the way that you're not moving your body or whatever it is, like, why don't you take us into the inner sanctum of your consult room when someone has a problem and is there looking for your help on it? Mm-hmm. If they're toxic.
Well, PC, it's a different sort of relationship, but even at this stage and these days, it's harder for a practitioner to tell a patient what it is that they really need to hear, because you run the risk of offending them or being not PC anymore, not being sensitive to their psychological health and well-being. And so there's all these different layers these days. So I would hazard a guess that most practitioners these days probably don't tell their patients what they need to hear and probably tell their patients what they would like to hear. For a number of reasons. One, as a chiropractor and as a naturopath, I really value the time that I get with my patients, because I feel like in the long run, I can probably more easily lead by example rather than to give instructions for them to follow. And so I feel like it's a long-term game. And I feel like most people these days are very sensitive to information, to the extent that even with best intentions and good, goodwill and good intentions, best, you know, all that, I feel like most people are offended by a suggestion that they aren't doing that well. Because let's face it, no one wants to be wrong. And in any case, whether it be medication choice, intervention choice, whatever it is, they'll defend it to the death that they're doing the right thing, because they don't want to be wrong. They want to have chosen the right thing for themselves and for their children and for whatever else. And so whatever the decision is, they don't want to be seen to be wrong. So it's like somehow you've got to kind of have people come along the journey with you. And so I think here in Australia, and maybe in parts of the world where you've got to be PC all of the time, and even if you want to give a little rib tickle to your mates, there's only probably a handful of mates that you can probably give a little rib tickle to that may or may not, you know, be offended. I've even had situations where I've had rib tickles and it's been taken offensively, and where I thought that things were going to be totally fine, things were going to be good, but it's not always the case. So I think people are very, very sensitive these days. So PC, what I need from you, because the practitioner hats, it's difficult. It's difficult. Okay.
Well, I'll put my hat on then, yeah, because I find it hard to hear.
Well, it's hard to experience, you know, and so how do we fix this situation? How do we fix this problem? You can't be from a practitioner perspective. I'm talking from a mate's perspective. Yeah. How does family and friends, because the patient-doctor interaction is very different, how does the mate or the family let's call it all family and friends, because it's one, it's now one tier in the exceptional life is family and friends. So how do we do that? How do we get that right?
Look, first of all, I would suck at being a practitioner at any age, but definitely in today's age, I would have had my accreditations taken away from me for upsetting and harming people emotionally or mentally by saying the wrong thing, because I feel as a paying customer in the world that I pay the professional to tell me the thing that I'm not getting from, you know, my family that says, oh, you'll be right, or my friends that say, suck it up, or whatever it is. But I completely understand what you're saying is that despite the fact that
can I preface that?
Yep.
Let's say, for example, someone's come to me with sore knees and low back pain. And I make a suggestion that it could be because your weight's going up. I run the risk of that person no longer coming back to me because they feel like I'm judging them, but I'm not. Like, what I'm trying to say is that this is a potential real cause for the reason why your low back is playing up, and that your knees are playing up, and your ankles are playing up, and all that sort of stuff. And like, this all just makes perfect biological sense. And it should be easy enough to say that. If somebody came to me and said, oh, I need to lose weight, it would be easy for me to say, yes, well done, that's true, I agree with you, let's get into it. These are things we need to do, your diet's terrible. That's easy. But in the context that a person comes to me and pays me for health advice, unless they specify exactly what it is that they need help with, it's difficult for the doctor to go in and suggest anything other than what they're seeking. So if you came to me, PC, and you said, I have, I was going to say this, erectile dysfunction, can you help me? I would say, yes, PC,
why
I can.
Why did you choose that example?
I don't know. I just did. I was thinking, why would PC come to see
Producer
me?
Producer Min is having a meltdown in the background there.
I would say, PC, take these herbs. It's highly likely to help you out. Off you go. But what I couldn't do is say, PC, what I have noticed is you put on 250 grams. I think you need to lose some weight. So I couldn't do that sort of thing because, you know, it's not what you came to me for. Do you know what I mean? So if it's not about staying in my lane, because my lane is wide. I swim in 8 lanes in the swimming pool. So I'm happy to go in all of them. But if somebody says to me, this is what my problem is, I think they want a biomechanical solution as opposed to a biochemical solution when it comes to that sort of stuff. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So
you know, my point is that as a health practitioner, when somebody comes to you with a problem, if it's not directly related or it's not the problem they're seeking help for, it's difficult to then shift their focus.
So when I hear all of this, I'm putting on my, you know, what some people will call me a life coach, and let's just go with that just for now because that'll make this conversation easier. In many ways, I get paid to call out the harsh headline that no one else is telling the person that they typically don't want to hear, but they do want to hear because they actually want to have the conversation about the awkward thing that is just like a big backpack of rocks, or it's a big boulder on their back, but everyone else is teetering around it. And this is to your point, Damo. Society today can talk light and fluffy all day long, but they don't want to have the big conversation that is at the very center of that person's life. And this is the thing, we're talking about someone's life. I just use the example today of being on a suspension bridge, and at times in the bridge, that bridge begins to wobble and we begin to have worries in our lives and we doubt ourselves, and we might have made the wrong decision. Like we're in a toxic relationship, let's say, using this example. And we go, oh my gosh, how did I actually fall in love with this person? How did I actually create a life with this person? I've made the quote unquote wrong decision. To your point, Damo, we don't want to go to our friends and family and go, look, I've made a terrible mistake here. I've landed in a relationship that I've realized is wrong. And we don't necessarily feel this safety, as counterintuitive as it seems, we don't feel a safety to go to our inner circle to tell them about a mistake. But people, I'm often talking to people that are not emotionally attached to my life and vice versa. Then I'm not related to them, they're clients, But I'm having this inner circle conversation about, let's call it a mistake that they've made. And I'll just use an example right now because I have a client that is in this exact situation and they are concerned about the internal feeling and the external perception that they will have made the wrong decision by ending this relationship. And so your point, Damo, is 100% spot on. It's not so much about the toxic relationship. It's, oh, but then I've got to admit that I made a mistake in being in this relationship. And then I've got to deal with all of that that comes up. Like, who am I? Am I stupid? All the fallout. Not even just the social fallout, but the personal self-esteem fallout of, oh my gosh, can I not understand people anymore? Am I not reading the room when it comes to who I'm attracted to, whether that's friends or intimate partners and so on and so forth? And so, and even just in parent relationships with parents, I say this, and again, this will sound really brutal, but sometimes, and I love my parents, so this isn't about my parents, but some people realize that their parents are just, I'm not going to swear, but some people realize that their parents were just in this lifetime, not really nice, amazing people. But they don't want to say that. But they realize that their parents in this lifetime were not the most supportive people. Their parents could not regulate their adult lives. Their parents may have had really rough and tough upbringings, and they're sensing that it's really hard. So they've got really strained, cold, almost call it toxic relationships with their parents. They've never been able to connect in any way, but they've never been able to really empathize and appreciate their parent for what they went through. And then so that toxic relationship has always had a barrier of not saying this big thing that you're bringing up, Damo. And so even as you talk now, I feel like a part of this toxic relationship conversation is not having a safe space to call the elephant in the room. And that is a blight on our community in many ways, our social fabric, that we don't have that. But I also say it as like I'm in a protected little zone here, because, I mean, I've got such a open relationship with you. I mean, you're my wife now, given that I just said that a few minutes ago. But, like, I will tell you anything. The deepest, yeah, darkest, weirdest stuff that even if I go, oh, shit. So I'm a little bit guarded, but I would say I listen to a lot of people's boulders on their backpacks, but I feel like I'm an open book. And I say that I'm not saying that to be proud or anything. It's just not been a thing in my life. But I say it's not because of me. It's because of the friends and family that I have that I feel like it's there. But when you say, Damo, oh, but how do we do it? I feel like, gosh, that's a concerning question if we're going, well, how do we do it? Because it shouldn't be that hard without wanting to sound simplistic.
I feel like these days, a lot of the time, in order to address this stuff, you have to start a conversation with a statement or a question. And it sort of goes like this, PC, do you mind if we have a tough, tricky conversation? It's difficult for me to have this conversation with you, but do you mind if we have a little conversation that might be a little bit uncomfortable? Mm. You know, and it's kind of, you've got to preface it with that. It's almost like the beginning of a feedback sandwich, which is, you know, it's just, yeah, it's unfortunate, yeah, that we've got to have that these days, and maybe that's just where we've got to be at the moment until we get through this PC-ness. I don't know if we ever get through this PC-ness.
I don't mind your feedback sandwich already, though. I often use this awkward. I'm like, can we just have an awkward chat for a minute? I feel like I'm always saying, we just needed to have an awkward conversation just for
a moment. Yeah, you're good at it. Yeah, you're not backwards in coming forward, let me tell you. Like, you are a bull at a gate when it comes to...
No, that's because I bring all my boulders to you. I'm like, Damo, I've got this boulder.
That's not true. But you don't mind confrontation. Like, you do it really well. So, but I don't. So, I think, you know, in the situation where we have confrontation, which probably leads us to this situation where, you know, if you're not good at confrontation, then I think it's really easy to stay in a toxic relationship because it's hard to address it. So I can't imagine, PC, that you would ever get stuck in a toxic relationship because you'd move on pretty quickly. You'd tell somebody to their face exactly what they're doing and how they're making you feel. But for someone like
that
me,
is
who's
a
bit more
far. Take that back, and you know it. That
no, but I'm, you know, like I'm a bit more empathetic. You know, we, yes, talk about being an empath and all that sort of stuff. I find it hard to get out of toxic relationships. whereas I feel like you would find it easier to get out of a toxic relationship than what I do. What do you reckon Maria did to get out of her toxic relationships? Do you reckon she just slammed the door in their face and moved on, or do you reckon she had a tricky, awkward conversation with them, or what do you reckon she did?
It's a good question. I reckon there are a few ways to skin the cat here. But you said something just then that got me going. Look, I think there's – so we've spoken, and I said this before with in an interview that you and I did with Mario Martinez many years ago. I always remember it. You know, you can remember one or two things from episodes. But he spoke about righteous anger. So I feel like – and he spoke about it very much in a – I'm going to say cultures that maybe Maria Moreira grew up in, where if someone's having a go at you or your family –
yeah,
you just go into nest protector or fight mode in a fight-flight relationship. Some people will just go into fight mode real quick. And to you, Seth, to your point, which I don't do, they will just tell you to your face, get out of my face, get out of my house, get out of my space, never again. Come anywhere near me and there's an AK-47 staring down your, you know, whatever.
Your gullet.
Your gullet. I've always said I'm a ducker and a weaver. So I'm not a fighter. I'm not a fly. I'm a freezer in a stress response. But, oh, there you go. Min gets to episode 181 of 100 Not Out, Mario Martinez.
It's like 1,000 episodes. That's amazing.
That was in the 1980s we did that episode. Yeah. But I think you've got to choose your way out of toxic relationships. You've got to know yourself in it. But you said earlier, I really want to pick it up, like, I feel like, for example, in a domestic violence epidemic of the world, and is an epidemic, we now have a lot of organizations that are the first point of call. Like, there are emergency hotlines to call to help you get out of violent relationships. And I am so grateful for those organizations. And I've got a few that I love and I support, and I just love them. They're just one of the most important movements on the planet, is helping people exit violent relationships.
We should give some links to those.
Yeah. Well, I'll put Rise Up. Yeah, I'll put Rise Up in there. So Min, can you put Rise Up, RIZE up? Nicole Edwards and her team do a great job there. But we have to be really, really mindful that there are many steps beforehand before that point arises. And I think, Damo, what you and I are about today is like identifying those steps and having life strategies in those earlier steps. Because I'll put my hand up, like, I'm not, and choose not to be, I'm not the expert in that you know, rise up space. But one thing that I'm not going to hang my hat on, but it's just happened a number of times over the years, and I helped someone about a month ago, I helped them leave a toxic marriage. And she did not know what her decision was made. She said, I'm done, it is over, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But she did not feel comfortable having a conversation with the partner, because she was concerned that the conversation could have led to some form of violence.
Wow.
Okay. So the logistics in that space, that fight or flight space or free space, a lot of people are in overwhelm. They can't make a rational decision. They had there were children involved, and so part of my work with this individual was working through the logistics and the ducking and the weaving to make it very humane, to make it very caring, empathetic, but humane to all parties. So getting communications right and all the rest of it. And this is where a lot of people struggle with in this toxic relationship space, because just the word toxic is stress in itself.
Yeah.
Toxic in itself is too much or not enough. It's too much or it's deficient, right? So that does not allow people to make the best decisions, to have great self-esteem, to make a decision for them and to put themselves first. Like, that's a really big part of, so you need to borrow that from someone. You need to have people that believe in you, that can see the better version of you, that can support you, that can help problem solve for you, that can put you under their roof for a day or a week or a month or whatever, because they actually want a better life for you. And that's why, again, you know, I'm scratching my head a bit at the beginning of this episode to just, it's so sad. It is so sad that many people don't feel like they have that in their lives to be able to get out of it. You know, on a personality level, Damo, you said maybe on your personality, you're very caring and empathetic and maybe you can let things go too far. But I'm talking about the ones, I suppose I'm talking about the ones where, you know, and I think I know what you're referring to, Damo, in other forms of life that is not, not what we're talking about here, but when we're talking about things where your physical safety is at stake, like that's where we need to have really helpful human beings on our side. And if people are listening and going, oh my gosh, like, I don't know if I have really helpful human beings on my side, then that's when you do need to go to those organizations that are built on that premise. Because if you're too far gone where you actually need to get out and take drastic action, then you need drastic help. But I think where you and I are, Damo, is like this 100 not out lifestyle is about cultivating a life where you've got people that love you and support you around you. That's why I always give you a pat on the back for like the way you are there. And always seeing Jackson, who lives in another country, you'll always spend time and money. And I know you're like, you will actually, like a lot of parents, you will do whatever you can to spend quality time with your son. And even though you may not say it in this way, what that does is in 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or 12 years' time, when he's going through a really tough time, all of these deposits in the bank account of your relationship add up to him feeling safe enough and comfortable enough to go, Dad, something really bad has happened and it's been my mistake and I don't know what to do because I'm under stress. Can you help me out? And that's what many people, unfortunately, don't have.
Yeah. While you were talking then, I had a BFO, which is, I think, worth sharing. And
blinding flash of the obvious for people under stress wondering what that one was.
Yeah. Producer Min was a bit lost there. She kind of went googly-eyed wondering what the heck's going on with, what's a BFO? Yes. So it was this. I think people will get stuck in their toxic situation. And you could say toxic relationship with food, toxic relationship with person, toxic relationship.
Job.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever the toxic relationship is. They get stuck because they don't know the way out. And there's no pathway. So in finding a really good human in your life, you're looking for someone to help you provide a pathway out. So it's the next step. So how do you get out of that? And it comes after the acknowledgement that something's wrong. So I think that there's strategies for people to remove themselves from that toxicity. But it's how do you help people get to the point of acknowledgement where they need a leg up? I think that's the curly one is how do we help people realize that there's something that they're drowning in, which is toxic. How do we get them to that point? And I don't know whether or not in this 22-minute podcast that we've got, whether or not we're going to be able to deliver that answer, but it's a great question. And I'd love feedback from our audience. Like, send us in your thoughts on what you think you could do to help somebody out. Like, what do you do or what do you say or how could somebody help you out of your toxic situation? What are the things that you're looking for? I'm not an expert in this space. So I think it's a really fascinating chat. How do you have someone come to the point of realization that something's got to change? Because I think there's plenty of people out there that can show you the way out, but how do you get that person to a point where they can acknowledge that something's got to change?
So I remember an episode we did on 100 Not Out about this guy, Dr. Damien Kristoff, that had a six-step process called Crack Your Stress Code. Was it six steps? Five steps?
Yeah, I think we added a few and subtracted a couple. I can't recall.
So when you talk about stress, you say that we stress because we care.
Yeah.
And I think if people are listening going, yeah, well, what is the first step? Well, first of all, you must ask yourself, do you care enough about your friend or family member's situation to essentially want to be able to stress about it? Because as soon as you go into that to that friend or family member and go, I'm concerned about your toxic situation, whatever it is, you are consciously creating for yourself a little ball of stress. But that's a good thing because you care. And I think calling it out, the other thing is, it also, and to your point at the very beginning of this episode, Damo, a lot of people are scared that the person will respond and react and defend and resist and say, there's nothing wrong, you're out of line, how dare you, that's not the case, da, 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 da. So communicating that effectively is really important. The good old can we have an awkward, can I ask you a potentially awkward question? The second part of it is, as you were talking about that, Damo, was sometimes in this process, we realize that the people that we love, for want of a better term, are sick little puppies and they aren't going to do the work to get out. Because let's be honest, if anyone here's been in a toxic relationship and they've got out and they can look back on it and talk about the experience, they will tell you how difficult it was to do it. And the biggest challenge with this process is being able to see someone that you love, but also see a sick puppy that is not, in this time, not going to do the work in order to get out of it. And again, whether that's with food, whether that's with work, whether that's with family or friendships or habits, addictions, whatever it is, and that's where from an empathy perspective, the empaths find that really difficult to let go of because it's like, but why? But why? Because I love that person and that person is so beautiful and I want them to have a great life and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, and that's how we feel and that you know, that makes a lot of sense. But that is the challenge that we face in having the courage to care, as the great book says. Having the courage to care is the great race that we play in life with people that are going through tough times. And but I would say if this conversation has brought anything up for you, the listener, and you're thinking about people and or yourself, we implore you to find that courage to care about your loved ones and or to care about yourself enough to find your way out of that toxic situation.
100%. 100%. Good chat, PC.
Boy, that's a big one.
Yeah, big chat. We could take that down many rabbit holes, couldn't we?
Yes. Ooh. Now, I'm going to say, and it's going to sound like a plug, but
I think the cure for all toxicity is to come to Ikaria or Sardinia with us.
That is exaggerating and hyperbolic, but let's go with it anyway and put a bit more mayonnaise on it. Go. It is the bucket list trip of a lifetime that you will never forget that will cure every ill that you've ever had in your life. little asterisk, just don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. But if you are in Melbourne, one of the most caring health professionals in the world is Dr. Damien Christoph. He has a great team down there at Vita Lifestyles. Go to DamienChristoph.com. Myself, I'm not as empathetic and I'm not a health professional, but my stuff is over at marcuspierce.com.au. But we equally love you just in our own different ways. And as Damo said, Ikaria, Sardinia, all the details, 100notout.com. Damo, you're a dead set legend. Thank you for your love and support and your wisdom and your care and this conversation. I think this is one that will go down in the vault for some time to come.
Thank you, PC. Great chat. And thank you so much for your wisdom.
To all of our listeners, we hope this has had a great impact. Share this episode with your loved ones. And until next week, continue to make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Bye for now.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.